This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour of the show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks, they roast their peanuts, fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar, light by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. It's great to be with you here in the Sunbury Motors Studio, and great to bring in on what was supposed to be opening day, but there's a drizzle. And so, no opening day until tomorrow. Scott Lauber, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much for your time. I know how valuable it is, and we appreciate the minutes you give us.
Anytime, Steve. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for asking. Okay, most teams, let's see, some teams come out of spring training, and they're a little unsettled even going into opening day. They make some moves at the last minute to finally settle the roster down. Some come out of it settled. An example is the Pirates were unsettled the last 2 years. This year, they're settled. How do you look at the Phillies come out of spring training? Settled or unsettled?
You know, really the same team as last year. Made a couple of additions in the off season, and when I say a couple, I literally mean a couple. I mean,
yeah.
Whit Merrifield joins the team as kind of a utility guy, and then, you know, a depth pitcher in Spencer Turnbull who's going to end up starting the season in the rotation. Otherwise, same exact team as last year, same exact team that went to Game 7 of the NLC.
Their chances, you know. I mean, they will. They'll take their shot with this group, and they believe that they have every bit of a chance to get to the World Series as anybody. So, very much settled coming out of spring. I think their number one goal was stay healthy. They managed to do that pretty much, and off they go.
Right. So now off they go. Well, let's talk about Whit Merrifield for a moment. In a 162 game season, what can his versatility mean to the club?
So I've been kind of a Whit Merrifield guy for a long time. I mean, this started for me back when the Phillies were looking for a center fielder in sort of the that Odubel Herrera, Adam Haseley, Scott Kingery, Roman Quinn era, and I always sort of thought, boy, Whit Merrifield would be a nice fit. He's at a little bit of a different stage of his career now than he was then. He's 35. He kind of tailed off last year in Toronto, in part, I think, and the Phillies think, because maybe he played a little too much. You know, he's a guy who's used to playing every day, but he plays six different positions. He could very easily wind up playing 4 or 5 days a week in 4 or 5 different positions. I think that's kind of what they have in mind for how they'd like to use him. But, you know, he also kind of helps them thread the needle in case they have an injury or in case they need him to play one position every day. And, you know, that was sort of a conversation point in spring training because everyone was talking about center field and Johan Rojas and would he make the team, and if he didn't make the team, what would the Phillies do? And really, once they picked up Merrifield, you could see a scenario where Merrifield plays every day in left field, Brandon Marsh moves over to center, and if they needed to give Rojas more time in AAA, they could go that route. It wasn't the way they preferred to do it. They ended up putting Rojas on the team. He will be the center fielder at the beginning of the season, but should he falter, should he struggle, and as I said, if they had an injury, Merrifield's a guy who could easily go play every day. So I think he's a very valuable guy to have over the course of a long season. And, you know, that versatility is a real strength, not only of his, but then he makes the rest of the team stronger. He's kind of I talk about Whit Merrifield like you know, an NBA sixth man, you know, like mm-hmm. he's kind of a tenth man in baseball because he could very easily play a large role, but he doesn't have to be an everyday guy.
All right, so now a year ago at this time, we're waiting for the return of Bryce Harper. And then I thought, as fine a display of guts, watched him play out last year. He's now a year and a half removed from the surgery, Scott. What kind of product did you see in spring training compared to what you thought you might see a year ago?
So my approach to spring training, especially with veteran players, especially with Bryce Harper, is to really not you really can't glean much of anything from it. And I say that because every player is different. They all know what they need to get ready for the season, however many at-bats that is. And in Bryce Harper's case, right, I mean, he had no at-bats last spring.
Right.
He didn't even go on a minor league rehab assignment.
Yep.
So I don't know how many at-bats he ended up with. He missed time because he has a bad back, right? So his back flared up for a few days there in the middle, and he missed some time. So I didn't really glean anything from spring training with him other than that he emerged healthy, right, and ready mm-hmm. Physically to start the season on time. So, you know, that's really the number one thing with Bryce Harper. I do think that it was important for him to get a full spring training at first base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a year ago at this time, you said, you know, you mentioned how a year ago at this time we were waiting for his return. A year ago at this time, he hadn't so much as taken a ground ball at first base.
Right.
That hadn't
That's
even
right.
entered his mind. Yeah. Derek Hall was still the first baseman in, you know, as the fill-in for Rhys Hoskins. He hadn't gotten injured yet, and Bryce Harper hadn't even been cleared to throw yet, you know, with his elbow. So that was something that, you know, he kind of, once Derek Hall went down and they were looking at the possibility of having to yo-yo Alec Bohm between third and first, Harper said, look, what do you say if I try to learn how to play first base, right? That was the middle of last April. So it's a little over a year ago since that happened. And then it was really a crash course for him. You know, he learned first base in about 3 months, and there were things he was limited in doing because he was coming back from the elbow surgery. So this is really a full spring for him at first base, and I think that'll only help him down the road as he kind of gets used to a new position in what's really sort of a second act of his career.
All right. We always talk about up-the-middle defense. You mentioned Rojas. That's what sparks the question. How do you feel about the Phillies' up-the-middle defense, catcher, second, short, and center?
I think you generally have to feel pretty good about it. I mean, as good as you would probably have felt in a while. They've been a pretty bad defensive team now for several years, and they've made a lot of strides in that area, I think, over the last year and a half. And, you know, when you look, you know, obviously behind the plate, Real Muto's as good as it gets in terms of catchers behind the plate.
Mm-hmm,
and,
no doubt.
And then at second base, they have a guy in Bryson Stott who was a finalist for the Gold Glove last year. He's really come a long way in learning that position and becoming a really good second baseman. Rojas is on the team because of his defense.
Mm-hmm.
I've covered baseball, Major League Baseball, for 19 years, and the only guy I've seen better in center field that I've covered is Jackie Bradley Jr. when he was with the Red Sox, was a
right.
gifted center fielder, and Rojas is every bit as gifted.
Yep.
You know, the one area where, up the middle, where you'd have a question, believe it or not, is shortstop, because Trey Turner did not have a good year defensively last year. I think it kind of got swept under the rug a little bit because he struggled so much offensively for two-thirds of the year. But he didn't have he had his worst year on defense that he's had, and they'll look for him to bounce back. But I do think, generally speaking, catcher, center field, second base, they look about as good as they've looked in a long time.
All right, so you bring up Trey Turner. This is going to be proof is in the pudding thing, but sometimes a guy will press his first year, and you talked about his offensive struggle the first half of last year, first two-thirds. And then they get to the second year, and they see this. They seem to settle in a little bit as to who they actually are. Is that what you're going to be looking for with him, to see if he settles into actually who he is?
I think so. I mean, I'll tell you this: sheer volume of words written about various players by that I wrote during spring training. I probably wrote less about Trey Turner than I did about a lot of them because he's not new anymore, and the narrative had kind of played itself out. You know, he had a really bad first two thirds of the season, and then he had a super hot last third of the season. I think the middle is somewhere where he is, and not quite the middle because he's a lot better than he was for the first two thirds. I think the thing that surprised me most, Steve, about Trey Turner last year wasn't how much he struggled. It was how inconsistent, how extreme the extremes were, because he's a guy who over the course of his career has been a pretty consistent player. If you look at basically every split you can find, right-handed versus righties versus lefties, batting second, batting first, there's kind of a tight range of production for him, you know, somewhere between 280 and 315 or 320. Mm-hmm. OPS, also a very tight range. I talked about this a lot with him last year. He kind of prides himself on his consistency, sort of being the same player, being a guy that doesn't really peak and doesn't really have valleys, but he's consistently excellent. And last year we didn't see that. We saw a guy who was really, really not good for a while, and then a guy who was just ridiculously red hot for a while. So I think you're going to probably see, I think the Phillies think that they're going to see that guy who is that consistent all-star kind of player for the majority of the year.
So they haven't changed much in the bullpen either. So what do they need out of that bullpen? What can make Robbie Thompson's life easier decision-making-wise based on the players he has out there?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not down on the bullpen, but I'm also not as bullish on it as some people might be.
I agree.
It's interesting. It's interesting because for the last several years, they've had this sort of this spot in the bullpen that's been filled by a veteran reliever. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, like Hector Neris left in free agency, and they signed Corey Knebel. Corey Knebel got hurt, and they traded for David Robertson. David Robertson left, and they got Craig Kimbrell. And now this offseason, Kimbrell left, and they didn't really replace him. And part of that has to do with their confidence in Orion Kerkering. Part of that has to do with the fact that Jeff Hoffman made strides last year and became a really reliable guy from the right side. But, you know, I think they need a lot of things. I think they need peak Hoffman again. They need Kerkering to continue to get better. They need Gregory Soto to have a better year than he had last year. You need Alvarado to stay healthy. You need Dominguez to stay healthy and pitch well. So, I wouldn't be surprised if they're shopping around for another reliever at the trade deadline. It feels like they often are. A lot of teams often are. Yeah. A lot of contending teams often are looking at the deadline. I think they have some depth. You know, they have guys like Luis Ortiz and Junior Marte who made the team on opening day and are optionable guys who can go back and forth and should be able to give them innings. But so they like their depth. I wonder if they're still a man short, and if that's something that they're going to need to address.
I think the part that you mentioned that's so true. At the trade deadline, everybody is looking for that person. Like we just need one more arm out there. Everybody's looking for it. Okay. Everybody always focuses on the end of a season. In your experience, how important has a start been for the most part for teams to get out of the gate in the first 2 months?
So the 2022 and 2023 Phillies would probably be proof that it's not the worst thing in the world if you don't start strong, right? I mean, they were 21-29 in 2022. They were 25-32 at the start of last year, made the playoffs both years. The thing is, if you start like that, it's not a death sentence by any means, but the road gets a lot harder, right? You've got to really put the pedal to the, you know, your foot to the pedal and really get going in order to make the playoffs. So you make your road a whole lot easier if you don't start 7-8 games under 500 over the first 2 months of the season. And it was a talking point for them in spring training. There's no doubt about it. They want to get off to a better start. Now, they don't have to get off to a blazing hot start, but you also don't want to bury yourself in the division. You don't want to put yourself in a position where you've got to play to a 95-98 win pace the rest of the year in order to make the playoffs. You want to be in a spot where you feel like you're coming out of the gate strong and not putting yourself behind the eight ball. So it's important for sure. I have seen teams get off to bad starts and not recover. You know, they are not, you know, they believe that they are a second half team. They believe that they are a team that's built for the postseason, but they also know, even in today's day and age, with three wild cards, and it's a lot easier to make the playoffs than it used to be, they also know that if you're not sort of eyeing the division from day one, if you're not sort of ready to go from day one, you can screw the whole thing up for yourself. So, you know, I do think that it's a focus of theirs to get off to a better start. I don't think they'll panic if they don't, but, you know, I do think it was something that they talked about throughout the course of the spring. How can we make April and May better than it's been the last 2 years?
Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on what was allegedly opening day. Appreciate you as always, Scott. Great work.
Thanks, Steve. Happy to join you anytime.
Scott Lauber, Philadelphia Inquirer, does an awesome job covering the Phillies. Look, they're pretty much the same group you saw last year. And first of all, I think they're exciting. I mean, I do think the Phillies are an exciting team to watch. And you know, I look at now look, the Braves are a big hurdle. There's no getting around it. The Braves are a big hurdle. And you know, the Braves are interesting in that they added Chris Sale. Okay. But Chris Sale now at this point in his career is essentially a five-inning, a dominant five-inning pitcher. He's dominant for four to the fifth as opposed to being the dominant seven, eight-inning pitcher he was before. He's now down to being a dominant four or five-inning pitcher. At least that's been the recent history with him because of the injuries. But they are still the team to beat in the East. Yes, the Phillies have been beating them in the playoffs. But, in the regular season, they've still been the better team. Long term. Okay, we will take a break. This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
All right. Love baseball. Love baseball season. Todd's a Mets fan, so he hasn't actually seen Major League Baseball in a while. What?
I did go to the Phillies to see the Mets play, so I did see Major League Baseball.
Oh, you saw the other team playing it. There you go. Perfect. Love it. Yeah. So, Penn State's been going Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday for spring practice, but this is Easter week. So they went Tuesday. They will go tomorrow for practice number 8, and then they won't be back until Tuesday next week. So that's how they're doing this week. I mean, you have to be able to fit in the 15, so there's got to be a week where you only have a couple. Well, this is going to be a week where they have a couple. Because the last week they're going to go Tuesday, Thursday, and then they do what's called Fast Friday. That's to get, especially the younger, you know, you want to remind the older players how you go about your business before a game, and Penn State does what's called, what James has talked about with everybody about Fast Friday. Well, they do that for the blue-white game as well, because that is, you know, you're going to play, quote, it's a scrimmage, but you're going to play a game the next day. You're going to simulate a game, so you need to make sure that you have Fast Friday done. So that's why that'll be the week with the extra practice. So you had to have a week where you didn't have as many. This is the week to do it. And so they will go tomorrow. In fact, Jack's going to come up here for that. We're going to go over to it tomorrow together and see what the deal is. And I've been watching anyway, but you know, it'll be the first chance for him to take a good long look at it himself, and I want to get his impressions about what he's seeing, because he's the brains of the operation.
I would say he's the football guy.
Yeah, he's the brains of the operation. And this half hour has been brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and every day. 6 great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Final half hour coming up. Tomorrow, Bob Nightingale, USA Today. We're going to talk some Shohei Ohtani tomorrow with Bob. He'll be with us at 2:06. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And the final half hour of the show brought to you by our good friends at NIL Game Changers, ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness. There are opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Just go to NILGameChangers.org today. All right. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Doug Birdsong is asking, if the suit was in the booth with you guys, would he be the brains of the operation?
I, as a good employee, would let him think he was. But probably not.
I, as a realistic individual in life, we'll decline to answer and have everybody assume what I think. All right, so okay, I think everyone has been watching the, not everybody, but I think people are aware of the saga of Alex Rodriguez trying to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? And the Minnesota Lynx, the WNBA team. Well, they have run into a snag. And then, not only running into a snag, but now even more so than that, it looks like, at least at this hour, it's not going to happen. Because Glenn Taylor, who's the current owner of the T-Wolves and the current owner of the Lynx, has halted the sale. He says he is no longer going to sell his controlling stake in the team. Now, minority owners Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez were the ones going after it. There's been a, you know, obviously I was just, I mean, I've spent, how many days have I spent in Minneapolis this month? Between the Minnesota game, it's 2 days, 4 days. I mean, I've spent like 6 days of this month in Minneapolis. So I've heard, and not only that, but Penn State practiced in the T-Wolves and Lynx facility. Okay. And I know there's been some consternation around this sale, only because they the people working there and buying the tickets wanted assurances from Rodriguez and Lohr about keeping the franchise there, as opposed to maybe moving it to Seattle. Okay. So that's been the backdrop, that's been the concern. Now, Lohr and A-Rod have never said that. They never have. But that's been the concern. Okay. Well, Glenn Taylor, is alleging that Lohr and Rodriguez failed to meet certain contractual deadlines and obligations of the sale process. Now, this whole thing began 2.5 years ago. And they say over the last couple of years, the relationship has disintegrated. And this is a year where the T-Wolves are having one of their truly outstanding seasons. They are 50-22. All right, there's the half game out of first place in the Western Conference. I mean, they've been terrific. Now, Lohr and A-Rod say that they have met their financial obligations to Taylor, including a final payment last week. Taylor agreed to sell them, along with the Lynx, for $1.5 billion. With a structure that called for a transfer of power over a number of years, Lohr and Rodriguez made a series of payments. So the two of them put together a joint statement, probably done by a publicist, which they looked at and went, yeah, okay, sure. You know how cynical I get about statements. Like, hey, yeah, okay, sure they did. We are disappointed with Glenn Taylor's public statement today. We have fulfilled our obligations, have all necessary funding, and are fully committed to closing our purchase on the team as soon as the NBA completes the approval process. They say it's an unfortunate case of seller's remorse. They say it is short-sighted and disruptive to the team and the fans during a historic winning season. Now, since the sale process began, now this is where Lohr and A-Rod were in a pretty good spot, and why they wanted the city to continue. Okay? Again, what's the selling price? $1.5 billion. Okay. What's the selling price of the Charlotte Hornets? Which happened, these are all three I'm about to mention happened after the $1.5 billion. Charlotte, $3 billion. The Hornets. The Dallas Mavericks, $3.5 billion. And Matt Ishbia bought the Phoenix Suns for $4.2 billion. That's all since A-Rod and Lohr got involved. The price has gone up for an NBA team exponentially. That's why I think when it comes to expansion, when they're looking at Vegas, they're looking at Seattle, or whatever cities they happen to be looking at, I think the expansion fee could be as high as $2.5 billion for each team, which is quick cash for the rest of the league. Taylor says he's no longer selling the franchise, but he's going to continue to work with Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez and the rest of the ownership, because they are part of the ownership group. They're just minority owners.
I'd be a little more sympathetic to the minority owners if one of them wasn't A-Rod. He's been a little sketchy.
You're just so... Oh, Just kidding.
The man has a picture of a centaur with his face on it, for God's sakes.
You're just so... Oh.
Actually, it's were born on the exact same date, so you'd think I'd have a little more sympathy for him.
Really?
Oh, I didn't know. We're both born July 27th,
75. Wow. See, the difference between you and the suit is the suit takes the whole month off.
If I could afford it, my friend, I'd work a lot less.
Oh, no, no. That is the Dick Girardi, Steve Jones mantra. Okay? And we've talked about this forever. And we've got Jack roped into it now. Right? Less work, more money. More money, less work. Sure. I mean, I think it's an interesting philosophy that's worth exploring.
Definitely.
Okay, Clemson, Arizona is the leadoff game tonight on CBS. They're playing in Los Angeles. That's 7:09, so it'll be 4:09 out there. Up in Boston at the TD Garden, the next game up is San Diego State, UConn. It's a rematch of the championship game. Not really. UConn's been rolling. San Diego State's played well. They're back at the Sweet 16. Alabama, North Carolina, back to L.A. at 9:39. And then I texted my buddy Brian Barnhart at Illinois. They got to wait 10:09 tonight to play Iowa State. I will be up to watch that game. I think of all the games tonight, I know a lot of people feel that Alabama, North Carolina is the most intriguing game. I understand that. But for me personally, I think it's Illinois-Iowa. It's such a contrast in styles. Iowa's an outstanding defensive team. They're just one of the top defensive teams in the country. They're terrific. But the offense for Illinois is top shelf. Now, Illinois doesn't play a lot of defense. Okay, let's be straight here. They don't play a lot of defense. But to the credit, Iowa State's offense is okay. But that's what they are. They're okay. It's like, all right. That's what the contrast in styles. And 9 times out of 10, I usually pick the team that's the better defensive team. I normally feel that's like, take Houston. Houston's in that spot tomorrow. I mean, I'm gonna pick Houston because of the defensive part of it. But geez, I look at this matchup, and when I see this matchup, Iowa State's defense is phenomenal. But Illinois' offense is outstanding. Again, not a great defensive team. Let's not, you know, get carried away here. They just aren't. But. When you look at, all right, so Illinois, offensive efficiency, they are, guess where they are in offensive efficiency?
Top five?
Number one. Numero uno. Okay? They're 91st in defense. Okay. Iowa State. Where is Iowa State ranked defensively?
Though I don't think they're one, but they're pretty close to the top.
They are number one.
Oh, they are one. All right.
Illinois is one in offensive efficiency. Iowa State is number one in defensive efficiency. Iowa State's offense is a little bit better than the defense of Illinois. They're 48th offensively. Iowa State does not play fast. They're 206 in tempo. Keyshawn Gilbert's a really good player. I think Lipsy's a really good player. You know, I mean, they've got a couple guys that can really play. But I look at the Illinois offense and the speed with which they play. When I mean the speed with which they play, I'm not talking about tempo. I mentioned Iowa State's 206 in tempo. Illinois 71, which is fine. But you watch the pure speed of the athleticism of the team. Illinois has athletes, especially, you know, Terrence Shannon And look, I'm not going to go into all the Terrence Shannon off the court stuff, because I feel like once you've done that a couple of times, you can't just keep repeating it, okay? I mean, his preliminary hearing is until like May 12 or something like that on all this. And I don't have enough information to properly talk about it. But they spread out their offense. I mean, 50% of their points are from two, 30% are from threes, 20% from the free throw line. I mean, that's, you know, what they do is balanced along the way. I mean, that's what they do. They're balanced the way they play. And then you look at Iowa State, more geared toward a two-point team. They get 55% of their points from two, and they get 26% from three and 19% at the line. Okay. But it's the contrast in styles. And usually I go with the defensive team that wins the game. Not this time. We are going to go with the offensive team this time. And it has nothing to do, by the way, at all with the fact that they're in the Big Ten. Nothing. Because I can, you know, I can sit there and look at the... Houston is, let's see, Connecticut's the number one overall team. So let's take Houston, for example. Houston's number two in the country in defense. But you know what? And we talk about the droughts they have, which is a problem. But they're 14th in offense. 14th in offense. And they're balanced. 51% from twos, 32% from threes, only 17% at the line in terms of like percentage of points. And then we get to the number one team in the country, UConn. Where do you think UConn's defense is ranked? I always put you on the spot with these things. I would say
they're probably top 10.
Eight. Yeah. Very good. Where's the UConn offense?
I would probably say down closer to Iowa State.
They're two.
Really?
Yep. And this is efficiency.
Oh, yeah. Right? I was going to say, they're not playing near as fast as they did last year.
No, they are not. In fact, this year UConn is 317 in pace.
Oh, yeah.
Their adjusted tempo is 64.9, so 65 possessions a game adjusted tempo. They are 294 in length of possession. They average 18.5 seconds per possession, and 317 in adjusted tempo. Like, and I've been pointing that out the whole tournament, right? That they don't play as quickly as they did last year. 51% of their points are from two. 32% of their points are from three. They get 17.5% of their points from the free throw line. But Newton is just fabulous. His overall ranking nationally, overall, with you put all the numbers, it's third. Donovan Klingon, Stephon Castle, Cam Spencer, Alex Caravan, Hassan Diarra. I mean, they're just really, really solid all the way across. I mean, solid all the way across.
I mean, you can take, you know, you think you could take solace in the fact that, you know, maybe you get a chance if they don't shoot well or something. You know, you have a shot at them. And weren't they like 3 of 23 against Northwestern from three?
Yeah.
And so
right.
Maybe that's not the answer either.
Nation's longest active winning streak, 9. So they won 9 in a row. Last team to beat them was that game at Creighton where they got blown out by 19 points. And, I mean, they were blown out. I watched the game. It really was not competitive in the second half. The only other losses they have are Seton Hall and Kansas. All right? You know what's interesting about the Kansas game? In the last two years, that loss at Kansas at Fog Allen Fieldhouse, 69-65, is the only non-conference loss they've had in 2 years.
That's scary.
All right. I mean, how about that? I mean, beat Indiana, beat Texas, beat North Carolina, beat Gonzaga. I mean, it's not as if they went out and they played some sort of non-conference game. Oh, well, of course. So what? Yeah, they probably played nobody. Nope, they played pretty much everybody. All right. Okay, Purdue. So where is Purdue ranked offensively?
Would they be top 10 too?
They're third.
Yeah.
Where's Purdue defensively?
It wouldn't surprise me if they were top 10.
15.
Yeah.
So very good. Now, here's the interesting part. You know, I've been talking about percentage of points. What's the percentage of points that Purdue gets from two-pointers?
50?
48.5. I think a lot of people think it's like 55 or 57%, something like that, because of Zach Edey. But it's 48.5. They actually get 30% of their points from threes. Now they get 21% from the free throw line. Again, Matt Painter, in his career, where the, I got to find this. I think he is only, that Purdue has only lost 7 games with him as the head coach where the where they had more free throws than the opponent did. I'm sorry, where the opponent had more free, they had more free throws than the opponent. They only lost 7 times. It's amazing. I'll give you the exact number in a moment. We'll wrap it up after this on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn what they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
The Yankee injury report, DJ LeMahieu, 10-day IL. Beavis is out. Tommy Conley is 15 days. McKinley Moore, 15-day. And it lists Aaron Judge as never sure. All right. Here's the Purdue record. Okay. 30 times this season they've shot more free throws than the opponent. They are 27-3. That means there's only been 5 games where they've had fewer. They're 4-1. Under Matt Painter, so I think I exaggerated the number, 336 wins and 49 losses when they shoot more free throws. But that's 385 games he's coached where they've had more free throws, as opposed to 221 where they didn't, or 222. They're 101 and 111 when the opponent has, let me see here. Let's make sure I got that right. No, they're 108 and 153 when they don't. 108, 153 when they have fewer. That's how important it is to them. It's 161 games that they've had, or 261 games, as opposed to almost 400 games. Really? When it comes to free throws? They're 336 and 49 under Painter, 27-3 this year.
It's not like this is, well, you know this. This is not like they haven't played like this for years and years and years. Zach's not the first big man they've had.
No, my goodness. Oh. They have had, to their credit, there is, quote, in terms of size, every year as big a team as you will see. And they have other guys coming up. Kaufman, Wren, Berg. Jeez.
He has a type.
And it works.
Yes, it does.
Now, has it worked yet to the Final Four? That's what they're all aching to see.